Welcome to the Daily Wrap Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
March 24th, 2019, and I was gonna take the day off today. And you know, I just can't stay away from you guys. And of course, there's some important news that I know you will never hear on the mainstream media, or from most of the independent media for that matter. We now have Trump about to sign an executive order on declaring the Golan Heights, that's illegally occupied by Israel, Israel's territory, even while a bill for the same exact thing is right now in the Senate. I guess Netanyahu can't wait that long with elections coming up and Trump, you know, dutifully obliged. There's some more development on the recent U.S.-backed terrorist cell that was apprehended in Venezuela as the story begins to flesh out. And as you might expect, it's not looking too good for the U.S. narrative. There's more threats by the Trump administration that reveal they actually care very little, if at all, about the average Venezuelans. And while Trump claims for about the 15th time in the last few months that ISIS is now officially defeated, a Syrian journalist in Syria is exposing that the U.S. just actually made another deal with ISIS members, even though they're apparently defeated, and he is reporting that they are not defeated at all, and in fact that the U.S. is shipping them to Al-Tanf, the U.S.-controlled area, and other U.S.-controlled areas. Very interesting, especially in regard to the Al-Rukban internment camp where Syrians are being held. That's exactly where he reports they're being shipped to. But to begin today, just a reminder that a major event took place yesterday and the mainstream media has yet to touch it. Oh, which one? That's a good question. I need to be more specific when discussing things the mainstream media refuses to cover. If you watched my show yesterday, you'll remember that we reported that there was a chemical attack that took place in Syria. A lot of evidence, including the video you can watch for yourself right here, including multiple other outlets and different people on the ground, independent journalists that are covering this story, and the mainstream media has yet to cover it. Interesting how that works. Exactly like the recent attack, where it was U.S.-backed rebels that carried out a gas attack, very easy to show, and they just completely ignored it. The U.S. threw out a couple of talking points saying, oh, that must be Russian propaganda, blah, blah, blah. No coverage by the mainstream media. A huge event. People are verifiably suffering. Nothing. I just think that's incredibly important to point out. Of course, if it went along with the U.S. narrative, this would be all over the mainstream media. But as of yet, not a peep. It took them over a week last time to even come out and try to say that was only Russian propaganda. Interesting, it took them that long to fail to address such an important story. But I personally found that to be very important to show you that they're simply not covering yet another massive event that's happening in Syria. But on to some other more important things than the mainstream media not doing what we think, what they tell us is their job, when their job is actually to misinform you. But some other news that I think is incredibly important that was, again, coming out today. That's a developing story in regard to the Golan Heights in Israel that I've continued to talk about. And I also pointed out in the previous story that Israeli officials came out first and said, we think Trump's going to do this within a week. Within hours, Donald Trump hopped up on social media and just could not wait to say, I'm going to do what they just said I'm going to do. Interesting how that works. Well, now it's taking it even one step further. Israel is saying, before Trump has said anything, that Trump is going to recognize Golan Heights via executive order as Israel's territory this Monday when they're supposed to meet. I find that incredibly interesting for many reasons. As it reads, U.S. President Donald Trump will sign an order recognizing Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights. And that's the way they word that is always trying to make it sound like, oh, it's in dispute. They're illegally occupying territory. The vast majority of the international community all agree. They're illegally occupying Syria's territory. There's no discussion there. The only difference is that the U.S. and Israel claim otherwise. That's the only discussion. Everyone else thinks that it's illegally occupied territory, just like the U.S. is illegally occupying places all over the world. But they want you to hear it otherwise. Recognizing Israel's sovereignty. But so they say Trump will sign an order recognizing Israel's sovereignty over this area when he meets Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Washington on Monday. Israel, this is according to Israel's foreign minister, which, by the way, was exactly what Israeli officials said about a week ago. They must be absolutely psychic. They must be able to know that this stuff is about to happen. It says, quote, literally, quote, President Trump will sign tomorrow in the presence of Netanyahu an order recognizing Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights. Now, again, this is the main reason I find this to be so interesting is because this is currently going through Congress right now, and it's in the Senate for the exact same thing. You know, the proper way this is supposed to go through. I love how Trump was the one that was so overwhelmingly critical of Obama using executive orders. And there is a place for it. But we had this is the exact point to make. This is in Congress. There's not the kind of thing you would use an executive order for, seeing as how it's going to fly through Congress. And Trump is clearly going to sign it. So why is he then deciding to discuss even, because it hasn't happened yet, but I clearly think it's going to discuss an executive order for the very same thing. What an utter waste of our of political process in the United States, taking this away from the American people as if it was ever really ours to begin with. But understand that there, like I said, this is right now going through the process. And that but the U.S. declaring Golan Heights to be Israel's. But apparently the Israeli government just couldn't wait that long. So they called on Trump, as we've seen in the past, and now he's about to sign an executive order, even though there's a bill for the same thing. I mean, really think about that. How does this make sense? So again, with everything that Americans desperately need right now, and everything that they could definitely use, that they want their politicians to actually do something about, both the Congress and the executive branch are only thinking about what's best for Israel. How can we not see this? Now, of course, Moon of Alabama, in an excellent article, points out that this is all about the election, which is what we've been saying for a very long time. This is why they've waited. They can't wait for this to slug its way through the House and through the Senate into Trump's desk. And so clearly, as we can see, as always, when these things happen, Israel's influence on U.S. policy. They stand up and say, sorry, we can't wait for that bill that we've paid you to pass. So Trump, hop to, sign an executive order. We need this before my election. This is Netanyahu, because this is going to save it for me. As he's talking about in his article, this is why they waited until this point to make this happen. We've seen this coming. We know the United States has bent over backwards to do anything the Israeli asked them to for quite some time now. And the reason he waited until now is to help Netanyahu get reelected, which is a very uncertain thing. So think about that. This is what we're talking about in regard to our politicians doing things for a foreign nation, and it's not Russia. People have been asking me why I'm not even covering that story, because I think it's stupidly obvious. The entire Mueller thing, we've been covering that forever. It's all been a lie. We've been saying that from the beginning. So now that we find out it's a lie, I don't find that to be news, personally. Yeah, they lie. We all know they lie. We need to get past these things. But the reality here is that our politicians are working for a foreign country. That has to resonate with us. It has nothing to do with Israel specifically, except for the fact that they're the largest culprit right now. It's not about a racial thing. It's not about Jewish people. I say the same thing about Saudi Arabia. If American politicians are working exclusively for the benefit of a foreign country, I don't care who it is, that's not okay. And the point is they try to make this about a racial thing. Oh, it's anti-Semitic to point that out. No, it's un-American to not point it out. That's the reality. And so when this comes tomorrow, I'll report it then that he signed this after they said, yeah, Trump's going to do this. Look, he hopped up and did it. Wow, there's a bill going through. I can't even think of an example when there's been an executive order to pass something that's already on its way through Congress. I can't wrap my mind around that. And I hope other Americans can recognize how absurd this is and how obviously it shows that the American political institution is completely bought out and controlled by other groups, lobbying groups, to keep it simple. Clearly, the largest and most powerful that people all acknowledge is AIPAC, which is Israeli's lobbying group. That's a simple fact. But all that's anti-Semitic today because that's what they say. I guess we just have to trust that. But moving on to other news. In other news in regard to Venezuela, as I reported yesterday, Venezuelan Interior Minister Nestor Reverol gave a press conference on Thursday afternoon in which he claimed that U.S. groomed, self-declared Venezuelan ruler Guaido's chief of staff, Robert Marrero, led a terrorist cell, as they're calling it, that was planning attacks against public institutions using foreign mercenaries. We covered this yesterday. To which they have quite a bit of very strong evidence of support. It says, quote, Marrero was the person responsible for organizing these criminal groups, according to Reverol, speaking with reporters, adding that a number of weapons as well as foreign currency, which is important, had been seized, showing you that he has foreign currency coming from another location. showing you that it's not, you know, you have to ask yourself why any politician in this position would have lots of foreign currency on them while they're currently in their own country. It shows you something. Now, he added that the arrest operation was done in coordination with the Attorney General's office, making it completely legitimate, and they had a court-ordered arrest warrant for these people. Oh, such evil dictators that they get their court-ordered warrants. They just claim that the court's completely controlled by Maduro, which is entirely likely, just like our entire system's controlled by our politicians and people in ruling class situations here in this country. This is the way our systems work around the world. I don't trust governments or politicians. But the ridiculous nature is to try to make Maduro's situation look that much worse when it's almost, when contrasted with what's happening in Washington, a lot of times it looks better. That's my personal opinion. Doesn't mean I want to go there or anything else, but we don't want to get off the point of that the U.S. is lying about this country. That's what's really the real important thing for people to recognize. And Maduro said on Saturday, and this is something I talked about when I first covered this, that the country's special forces had thwarted not only a terrorist plot, but actually a plan to specifically assassinate him, Maduro. All directed, of course, by the opposition's leader, Juan Guaido. And this is according to a report coming from the French press agency. Again, one of the three main groups where all of mainstream media get all of their information, as I've shown in a previous show. Now, this story gets very interesting when you get into the nitty-gritty of it all. First, again, the recognize that about assassinating Maduro is a very important point. And I saw that coming because this is what they've been trying to do for quite a long time. But here we got Maduro's government showing several pictures of weapons. And I apologize for the poor quality of the images. This is what I was able to find. There's more information on this. You can read this article. You can dive into this further. There's video of even the things I'm going to get into in a moment. But Maduro's government showed pictures of these weapons and said special forces discovered it in Marrero's home. This is the chief of staff of Guaido, claiming that he was part of this terrorist cell. And it gets even more interesting when they break down what was on their phones and the information they had. Information Minister Jorge Rodriguez actually played WhatsApp conversations between Marrero and Guaido, in which they held various talks about funds blocked by U.S. sanctions used specifically to finance mercenaries with the support of Colombian President Iván Duque. Now, think about this. It's exactly what we've seen happen in the past. We're talking about Bolton, Pompeo, Abrams. This is literally what they've done before. Bring in another rebel group in another country. It's exactly what they've accomplished in other places. This is what they've done using humanitarian aid to ship in weapons, which they've already gotten caught, tried to do twice so far, just in this last case. Now we're talking about groups. We're using the funds that they stole from Venezuelans, pretending they care about them, to fund mercenaries. This is exactly what Donald Trump said on record. Take their money, give them some of that money to fund their revolution, and then we take their oil. Trump is on record saying this at least three times that I can find. So I don't know why people pretend like this is not exactly what's happening. It's basic. Now, Rodriguez showed that funds to finance the terror plot were derived from Bank of America and Banesco at Panama. And just as was expected, the U.S. responded to the arrest of Guaido's chief of staff, as we knew would happen, with more threats, ignoring all the evidence presented and pretending that it's all a fabrication of the evil dictator Maduro. You know, again, failing to acknowledge anything that they present. Here's a tweet from Mike Pompeo. The United States condemns raids by Maduro's security services and detention of Roberto Marrero, chief of staff of interim president Juan Guaido. We call for his immediate release. We hold accountable those involved. Just ignoring any of this isn't saying everything you're saying is a lie. All of the claims you're making are false. It's just saying outright, no, let him go. We don't care what you think he did or even if he did it. That's our guy. Let him go. It's exactly what they do with the ICC. It's not you can't falsely accuse Israel, Saudi Arabia, the United States of any kind of crime. You just simply cannot investigate any of us, no matter what, regardless of the evidence. This is the reality today. This is not how civil society, this is literally what they claim everybody else is doing. The classic line, accuse them of that which you are guilty. Every day we see examples of this. Now, Secretary of Treasury Steve Mnuchin, of course, had to add in his 2 cents. He says the regime's continued use of kidnapping, torture, and murder of Venezuelan civilians or citizens will not be tolerated by the U.S. Roberto Marrero and other political prisoners must be released immediately. Political prisoners, they're breaking the law, first of all. And we're talking about Kidnapping? Oh, you mean like the CIA and U.S. forces have done repeatedly throughout history? You mean torture, like Gina Haspel, who's currently running the CIA? Or kidnapping and torture, such as that happened to Chelsea Manning by the United States forces? Or murder of Venezuelan civilians like they're currently doing with their sanctions and everything? It's just stupidly ridiculous to see them when they put these comments out. Utterly disconnected from reality. But this is something people see if they simply care to use their brain and research things instead of blindly listening to career liars. Well, Guaido, of course, in a press conference, added himself, including himself in all of this, quote, as they cannot take the interim presidency prisoner, so they seek out people closest to him. Operation Freedom continues around the country. Operation Freedom, Guaido and his lackeys running around screaming about overthrowing a government while no one pays attention to him. Operation Freedom! This is what he's talking about. But he's talking about they cannot take the interim president. That's ridiculous. He has countless, countless opportunities to take Guaido, and he didn't, because the guy is useless out there. He's clearly not getting it done. They're floundering. The effort is failing. So as the Moon of Alabama pointed out in a previous article, just let him run around town screaming as this thing fizzles out. There's no need to arrest him because he's not doing anything that matters. The United States government is the one with the pull on what they're trying to accomplish, but Guaido has been failing. And again, that's how they branded it when he came back into the country. Oh, we're succeeding because he didn't arrest me, right? But the reality is that they didn't need to him because you're failing. So again, they say, oh, they need to seek out the people closest to him. Because they can't, they're failing. Of course, when pressed about calling for a foreign intervention, the opposition leader, Juan Guaido, said that he would, quote, demand whatever is required to put an end to the usurpation. Again, using usurper, which is an incredibly inappropriate term. Even by their own claims, he is not, by the definition of the word, is not a usurper. You could say the election was illegitimate, which it's not. But they keep saying usurper because they just they want you to stick with these buzzwords. They're trying to rewrite what that even means. The same way they have done with deep state, the same way they've done with the word regime change. They change what you think the word means by continually using it in the wrong context. Because the real usurper is the United States. The real usurper is Juan Guaido by the very definition of the word. I mean, it's just humorous to see that their propaganda is failing today, which is so nice to see. Of course, everyone's favorite convicted war criminal, Elliot Abrams, didn't want to be left out of the gang, so he added the unnecessarily repetitive response of simply vowing consequences for those involved in Marrero's detention. Thanks, Elliot, because we didn't get that from the other six responses that said the same exact thing. It's just ridiculous. There's an agenda here as they all stand up and claim all the things they need to say, knowing this was the plan. But really, the plan was if Guaido got arrested, and I think that's screwing them here. Now, an interesting addition to this whole story, as this entire event is now being denied by the United States and its puppet forces, claiming that this is all a lie of Maduro, is that at the time of his arrest, confirmed by numerous witnesses on the scene, all this information you can find for yourself, Marrero, the chief of staff of Guaido, claimed that the weapons had been planted in his apartment. They were planted there. But I guess now those weapons never existed. We're just supposed to forget what he screamed out when he was being arrested because that doesn't align with what they're trying to sell you right now. These people are struggling with their lies. And it's important that you simply just take a moment and stand back and think. Because if you apply the smallest amount of common sense to almost everything they're doing right now, it's impossible to see what they're saying as the truth. Because it's that obvious. And that's what I'm here for. To show you what I'm finding and hopefully to have you do your own research into the information and not just take what I have to say. But on to another story from a Gray Zone, always an excellent source. In my opinion, one of the best sources coming out today in regard to Venezuela and really some actual investigative journalism. It's fantastic to see because there's few of them out there today. But this coming from Gray Zone and this again showing you that even by their own rhetoric, how obvious it is that they're lying to you about how they care about Venezuelans. Entitled, Trump Official Boasts Crippling U.S. Sanctions on Venezuela Are Like Darth Vader's Death Grip. Sorry, I cut the picture off there. Darth Vader's Death Grip. I mean, how ridiculous. That they think, how fun. This is the same as Mark Rubio putting out a picture of Godzilla breathing fire and making a joke about how they claim people are suffering everywhere, and yet they're making jokes about the situation. Or putting out a picture of of Gaddafi alive and then dead. Like, this is ridiculous that these people feel that they are this powerful, that they can stand up and make jokes while out of one side of their mouth they pretend to care about the Venezuelans, and the other side they say, oh man, our sanctions are killing those people. Ha 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 ha. It's so funny. Let's make jokes about Star Wars. These people are sociopaths. And again, as I continue to point out, they don't think you're going to look into stuff. That's it. So they feel like they can just say things and you won't know any better. It should be insulting to your intelligence. Now, while the U.S. is, of course, carrying out an obvious coup attempt, which I think is beyond reproach at this point, this is a clear illegal coup attempt being carried out in broad daylight by the United States. An obvious coup attempt, of course, in the oil-rich and gold-rich country of Venezuela, which the Trump White House claims, of course, is aimed at protecting human rights. That's what it's always about, even though there's no evidence to support that claim whatsoever. As, of course, has become quite the norm in U.S. politics, Trump officials are now publicly contradicting this claim of human rights and humanitarianism by boasting about how their sanctions are suffocating Venezuela, because those things come together, comparing them to the iron grip of the diabolical villain of Star Wars. A senior U.S. government official literally bragged at a briefing on March 22nd, quote, "The effect of the sanctions is continuing and cumulative. It's sort of like in Star Wars when Darth Vader constricts somebody's throat. That's what we're doing to the regime economically," according to this report by Univision. But again, this is the disconnect they think most people aren't getting, but I think they are today because of people like Alfred Dzaias and Mark Weisbrod and all the information we're showing, is that these restrictions on the regime are directly affecting the civilians, because that's what they're supposed to do. And again, as I've always pointed out, the U.S.'s own documentation very clearly outlines that they're supposed to hurt the people so that the people revolt against their government. It's in their own documentation. And they're just straight up lying to you today, which nothing new there. Now, the Trump administration expanded its aggressive sanctions against Venezuela again on March 22nd, targeting specifically the state-owned Venezuelan Economic and Social Development Bank, Bandus, I believe it's pronounced, and four more affiliated banks. This, of course, following the arrest of some of self-declared President Guaido's not-so-merry band of violent U.S.-backed regime change puppets. Now, Russ Dahlin, the managing director of the Venezuelan investment bank Caracas Capital, told Univision, quote, "It sounds like they want to make Venezuela radioactive. They want to choke off the money flow." And of course, that would never affect the average people of Venezuela. Why would that? Just ridiculous. I'm being facetious. Obviously, these actions have direct effect on the people living in the country that you're attacking. Simple. Now, U.S. sanctions have bled Venezuela of many billions of dollars, mind you, from Citibank to the Bank of England to the oil, the countless examples of how they're literally stealing money from Venezuela, taking most of it, giving a fraction of it to Guaido to try, as we've seen, to overthrow the country and fail, but stealing money from Venezuela. Now, Venezuelan civilians have suffered gravely because of this, as Washington's explicit campaign of economic warfare has prevented Caracas from importing medicine and medical equipment, and of course getting loans and all the other things they could do to actually try to pull themselves out of a hole, even though it's been created by the United States. They would have ways to try to save themselves from it. But then the U.S. steps in and stops that. No, nobody better help them. Nobody better give them loans or we will attack you too. They've actually said this. Now, this, as I've pointed out in numerous times, as economist Mike Weisbrot, a co-director for the Center of Economic and Policy Research and leading expert on Venezuela's economy, tweeted, "More impact of the Trump sanctions, specifically, that will deprive millions of Venezuelans of food and medicine. That is the strategy. Targeting civilians, as in Yemen." Of course, it shows from CNN even, which is surprising. The graph you can see for yourself. But of course, CNN doesn't correlate that with U.S. sanctions and the people on the ground. They don't do that. But the point is, this is an expert, one of the very few people that you should be listening to, who has the credentials, that is the man on the ground. He knows this information. Clearly, that their sanctions are hurting Venezuelan people and depriving them of food and medicine. Pretty simple. Even though they've continued to lie about the fact that both in Iran, Venezuela, in Yemen, in Syria, all the places where they're doing this, food and medicine doesn't make it through, even though they lie about it. And they've shown this roundly, but they just continue to say the same lie over and over. And enough truth seems, unless it's coming from the mainstream media, it seems, is never able to combat the Washington lies over and over and over. That's because people still blindly watch them, but I think that's changing. Now, Weisbrot told the Gray Zone in an interview that the Trump administration's 2017 sanctions on Caracas established a de facto financial embargo, which I think is unbelievably obvious. But most people would argue, or at least I would say most people that are still listening to the mainstream media, as I think Alvin Desaias called it, it's a form of a siege, like a medieval siege on an entire country. Now, Weisbrot added that the sanctions on Venezuela that were expanded in early 2019, quote, are very definitely among the worst sanctions ever imposed by the United States on any country, if not the worst ever. That is a huge statement to make. And it shows you exactly why their people, if and where you see it, are actually struggling in this country. Even though, and think about this, is what's even crazy, is even as they're actively trying to make a bad thing happen, actively trying to create a humanitarian crisis so they can point to it and say, look, see, we need to go help these people that we're hurting. But even as they do this, you can still find worse situations happening right here in this country, as Eva Bartlett, Alfred Desaias, Abby Martin, Max Blumenthal, Anya working with Gray Zone as well. All these people on the ground have all seen the same thing. And many people, even from the CNN or the mainstream documentary that we covered, that was working for mainstream media making a documentary, they themselves on the ground said, we have trouble even finding a homeless person. Doesn't mean they don't exist. But it's just ridiculous to think that what they're telling you over here and what they're actually seeing on the ground are so completely disconnected from each other. To the claim you could actually say that what they're saying is happening there is 100% false. If you want to see, just like Alfred Desaias said, there's no humanitarian crisis in Venezuela. The problems are happening because of U.S. sanctions. If you want to see what a humanitarian crisis looks like, take a look at Colombia. Take a look at Haiti. Look at Yemen. On and on. Now, for the final story, at least in regard to Venezuela, I felt this was very important to include. Coming from Zero Hedge, Russian troops, aid arrive in Venezuela. Oh, aid, that's crazy. By the U.S.'s own and the mainstream media, the entire coverage, there's no aid making it at all. That's funny, even though I think you guys all know that aid's been coming in from everywhere except the United States. They just don't tell you that. 900 tons coming from China. Aid arrived in Venezuela after delivering red line warning to Trump, which we recently covered. A red line warning, Russia put its foot down and said, no, you cannot do anything militarily on the ground, even though I argue they're probably already doing this, which we just found, they just caught rebel forces trying to assassinate Maduro. But they don't, military intervention is the point. They're putting a line in the sand. And to make that even more clear, there are now, and they've made claims, and this could have been true the first time, possibly, I don't know. Or it could have been a lie from the United States to make him look bad. But now they're confirming there are Russian troops on the ground in Venezuela. Which shouldn't be that shocking. They're an ally. They're allowed to be there. Just like Iran's allowed to be in Syria. It's not that shocking. But they try to make it seem like something nefarious when allies are helping each other. Only when it's Russia and U.S. adversaries. That's the only time that makes sense. Thank you for the super chat. But basically, first deputy commander-in-chief of the land forces of Russia arrived in Venezuela today, as I understand it. Or maybe late last night. The Russian general arrived in the Bolivarian Republic, accompanied by 99 servicemen. So it's really not that much. On board an AN-124 delivered, actually, in addition to that, 35 tons of cargo and aid, I would imagine. Or maybe weapons and other support for their military to fight off the illegal invasion that their regime changed. We can go ahead and call it an invasion. That's exactly what's happening. But it's a proxy invasion. That's how war takes place today. But this is a big step. Russian forces on the ground. Russia's red line, it's becoming increasingly more difficult for the U.S. to pull off any kind of a military invasion on the ground, which is something I was concerned about. But you never know what's going to happen. Maybe this is a larger plan, and maybe Russia's all part of it. We never really know. But at the end of the day, at surface level, with everything we have to see, including the history of the other countries such as Syria, it seems that yet again, Russia, clearly with its own ambition, and clearly this is going to benefit them to some degree like it would in any situation. Nobody's really truly that altruistic. But yet again, Russia putting itself on the side of what's morally correct. Standing with them, to their benefit, that's fine, but against an illegal act in their country. Just like it happened in Syria. They backed Assad, they forced the illegal U.S. invasion, and they're still there, ridiculously, which we're going to get to more in a moment. But clearly they were on the right side. And they are, and are now, again, on the right side of history. That never mean, again, I always point out, I don't have any, I have basically no trust for politicians or governments in general. That's my opinion. But credit where credit is due. And if they come in and doing a good thing, Russia's doing the right thing in this. Bottom line. And then what's funny is that people that can't say something like that because they've been propagandized to think Russia bad guy no matter what. That's the propaganda. I don't trust any of them, but we can see that they're doing the right thing here. Now, for the next story, in regard to the kind of the story I touched on in the ICC, in regard to how all of this stuff and all the illegal acts they're doing just get washed away because they're threatening the International Criminal Court with investigation of their crimes. And this applies to Saudi Arabia and Israel specifically. And this coming from Anti-Media entitled, U.S. Must Stop Threatening ICC Over War Crime Probes, according to UN experts, that they warn that they need to stop threatening them. Which is just, it's funny that this is even a title. The U.S. must stop threatening an International Criminal Court over war crime probes. It's just, it's like, yeah. I mean, how does it get to the point to where the United States can threaten an international body that's trying to investigate their crimes and they're the ones acting like they're offended? Oh, how dare you? How dare you investigate us? We can investigate our own crimes, because that makes sense. Right? I understand a system in a country, their own judicial system. We don't need the ICC to come and investigate my traffic tickets. But the reality is, when the very people who are supposed to be holding others accountable are the ones who are committing the crimes, that's when you need a body like that. And again, I'm not even arguing that that's something that we need. I argue against international bodies such as the UN. But the point is being made that what they're doing here shows you that they know that they're breaking the law and they just don't want to be held accountable for it. That's how I see it. But please come to your own conclusions as always. Now, two United Nations experts have urged the United States to stop making threats against the International Criminal Court, saying recent statements by top Trump administration officials may hinder the work of the international body. They pointed to a September statement by Bolton, which we covered at the time, who said at the time, quote, that ICC judges, prosecutors, and staff would face measures if they went ahead with investigating war crimes by the United States, Israel, or other U.S. allies. Interesting how that works. You just simply can't investigate us. Bottom line, we can do what we want. And those measures, he went on to explain, were actual criminal actions, even fines and arresting these people and charging them in the United States criminals court or in the United States judicial system. How is it possible that the United States thinks they have the authority to charge an international investigator in the United States court? It just shows you where their mentality is on where the hierarchy is. It's interesting. Now, Bolton threatened to institute a, quote, ban on ICC judges and prosecutors entering the United States. And he said that the U.S. would consider freezing their funds in the U.S. financial system, so taking their money, and ultimately prosecuting them in the United States. It says, quote, these threats constitute improper interference with the independence of the ICC and could hinder the ability of the ICC, judges, prosecutors, and staff to carry out their professional duties, according to UN experts. You don't say. I mean, that's exactly the point. It's like funny how they say this could hinder their ability. They're literally saying we're hindering your ability. That's what the U.S. is doing. You can't do this. I always use these like half-hearted words. I just find that interesting. Now, last week, Pompeo said the U.S. was imposing visa restrictions, which is what Bolton was threatening, and he followed through with it, on specifically individuals aiding the ICC initiative or further investigations into American and Israeli citizens. They just left off Saudi Arabia in this point. And I said very clearly, because this is what it really comes down to, is Israeli crimes, in my opinion. And of course, American crimes and their foreign policy, but they're interconnected. The reality here is he imposed visa saying, he said, you guys can no longer come in our country if you're investigating this. And not just them, but anybody aiding them as well. You're not allowed in the country anymore if you want to investigate our crimes. It's right there on the face. And it says, quote, I'm announcing a policy of U.S. visa restrictions on those individuals directly responsible for any ICC investigation on U.S. personnel. Pretty simple. We're above the law. You can't investigate us. Now, they make this ridiculous claim that, oh, the court, it's like they have bias against Israel. The same thing they make about United Nations, that this court doesn't have this best intentions, that they're going to, like, they try to float these ideas that the ICC is illegitimate and that they're, and I might even agree with that, but that they're somehow cheating and lying and manipulating to try to get the United States. That's what they want you to think. When there's no evidence whatsoever to support that claim. It's pretty clear. And it says, quote, this includes persons who take or have taken action to request or further such an investigation. These visa restrictions may also be used to deter ICC efforts to pursue allied personnel, including Israelis, without allies' consent. So now they have to go to the United States and say, please, ICC, can we investigate this individual that happens to be an Israeli? So now they literally said they need U.S. approval to investigate an Israeli individual. I mean, for crying out loud, how much more evidence do we need, people? I mean, why restrict visas in the first place? You know, if you have nothing to hide, right? Use their own rhetoric against them. If you've done nothing wrong, Bolton, Pompeo, United States oligarchy, then you should have nothing to hide. Oh, I guess that only applies when you seek to oppress people. Got it. That makes sense. Now, in the past several years, Palestinian leaders and human rights groups have said they intend to go to the ICC in order to hold Israel accountable for human rights abuses and possible war crimes. Now, remember, the new report, the recent report that was adopted and endorsed by the United Nations Human Rights Council, accusing Israel of war crimes. This is legitimately happening now, even though this has been ongoing for a long time. And it becomes clear that in spectacularly hypocritical fashion, even for the United States, the Trump administration is outright blocking the investigation of these now obviously adopted endorsed war crimes, or the adopted endorsed resolution about the war crimes of its allies. I mean, this is again, spectacularly hypocritical for them to stand in the way of investigating their crimes when the community roundly has said, here's the evidence. Here's our documentation. Here's our video. Here's everything you need. They're breaking the law. They're murdering people. And the U.S. just says, nope, sorry, can't do it. You can't investigate them. Now, Middle East Eye also reported in October that the ICC was on the verge of opening a war crimes probe into American soldiers and CIA officers operating in Afghanistan. Now, here, this is the U.S. side of the story. And this is something we've seen for a very long time, not just Afghanistan. This is the focal for this investigation, the focal point. But Iraq, Yemen, Syria, Somalia. I mean, all over the world. You could point out so many different locations where they've been killing people unjustly. But this is specifically about Afghanistan in regard to the United States. And it says, quote, Afghanistan is an ICC member, which means the court has jurisdiction over alleged war crimes committed there, which is interesting. Elizabeth Evanson, the associate director of the Human Rights Watch, International Justice Program, said this in a recent statement. And said Palestine is also an ICC member. So their point they're making is that because these countries are members and the U.S. committed crimes in these countries, even though the United States is not a signatory for the International Criminal Court or a part of their court, they still have the right to investigate these crimes that were committed by the United States. And that's a legitimate claim. And I can promise you the international community will be behind that. So this will come to using military force to stop an investigation, a legitimate investigation, if it comes down to that. And I truly think this is where we're heading. Now, she added that despite his threats, ICC officials and member countries are unlikely to be cowed by Bolton's disdain for the court. But his speech was a stark affront to victims of atrocity crimes seeking justice. It's impossible to disregard that, to not agree with that statement. And it just has to really show you that not just Israel, but the United States as well, and Saudi Arabia, acting with impunity, doing these things knowing that they can simply put their military force down and say, no, you can't investigate us. And then float the idea that it's because we're beyond reproach. We're righteous and moral. And we only do things for good reasons. Oh, we killed some people. We were trying to do the right thing. This is really what they want people to think. But obviously, the international community clearly thinks otherwise. And they just are really trying to propagandize the Western people through the Western media to see that they're to represent an entirely different majority. And this is the false majority, including with the media that I constantly point out. Hey, but people are waking up from it. I think we're beginning to see that. Now, for the final story of the day, and this is actually a big deal. Now, this story is coming from a journalist on the ground in Syria, a Syrian journalist who's reporting about this story from his sources and people he's talking to on the ground. As far as that goes, that's the information we have. So this could be entirely fabricated, but so could any news story today. But the reason I think this is important is because what this is reporting is what we've proven before. We have shown evidence in the past of the U.S. arming, supporting, defending, doing everything possible to make sure ISIS remains in Syria and everywhere else for that matter. Countless, picking them up, moving them, making deals, dealing with gold, taking Syria's oil money in the form of gold and selling, buying it from ISIS and moving them to other locations. I mean, over and over and over. Brandon Turville has done an amazing job covering this for a really long time. Now we have another story. Of course, the important part is after ISIS is now defeated. So this is a poorly timed story for the Trump administration entitled U.S. has a plan for Eastern Syria and it relies on ISIS. But wait a minute, ISIS was just defeated. How does that work? I think you all know the answer to that. But this gets much deeper than just working with them. We've seen this much, but a lot in the past. But now we're talking about working with them, making deals with them, using their families as leverage to force them into a tax on the Syrian government. Yeah, it gets crazy. Now, over a month after fierce clashes in the supposed last stronghold of the Islamic State in Baghouz village, Syrian Democratic Forces, the SDF, have announced final defeat of the terror group, which has been acknowledged by the Trump administration as another big success. Now, actually, before I go forward with this story, on a side note, as I said earlier, Trump has declared victory over ISIS 15 times since December, which is just ridiculous. And remember that Trump openly stated the first time, and by the way, you should read this article. It lists every single one of them with links to where he said it. You can't deny it. He didn't say, maybe, come, it's defeated. Oh, now next week. Oh, tomorrow. Oh, they're going to guarantee be defeated by next week. And on and on and on all the way till just now. And he did it again. Now they're defeated. It's just kind of humorous. But remember that Trump openly stated the first time he defeated ISIS back in, the first time he defeated ISIS back in December, that ISIS was the only reason for the U.S. to be there. He said it in his own tweet. And yet, now it's to combat Iran, who's allowed to be in Syria, unlike the United States, and of course, to protect Israel, which Trump said himself. Now, I think it should start to become clear that those were the real reasons to begin with to be in Syria. At least two of the top of the list, for that matter. And they manufactured a crisis to use in this area. The point being that the illegal U.S. invasion and occupation of Syria had nothing to do with protecting an oppressed population. Just as Venezuela is not about saving people. And just like in Venezuela now, hopefully more are beginning to see that there is no humanitarian crisis in either nation other than that which the U.S. has created. To see a real crisis, like I said, again, look to Colombia, right across the border, struggling. The largest cocaine trafficking ring coming out of this country while they're pointing to Venezuela. It's all easy to look at. Look to Haiti, the country where they literally just used U.S. mercenaries to stop a public uprising to overthrow a U.S. puppet. Funny how that works when they're, it's the hypocrisy makes my head spin. And of course, look at Yemen. The country is being starved to death by U.S. actions and the media can't be bothered to talk about it. Oh, but those are ignored because either the U.S. is behind the suffering or one of its puppet leaders put in place after a past coup is behind what's happening there, so they don't touch it. I mean, it's so transparent. It's all right in front of us. Now, the SDF, back to the story, the SDF, as I was saying, who had a supposed big last clash with ISIS in their final defeat. It's a force comprised of about 60% Kurdish and other Arab units that is considered the closest allies of the United States in their illegal occupation of Syria. Now, the SDF clashes with ISIS, the recent clashes, resulted in severe casualties for both sides. Now, while hundreds of terrorists, as well as their wives and children, surrendered to the SDF. Now, we've heard reports from this coming from the SDF and the U.S. This is something that's been reported. So far, it's even confirmed by the United States. Now, the terrorists in SDF custody were presented with a deal, according to the sources on the ground, which involves fighting against the Syrian government forces in the oil-rich desert area in eastern Syria. Interesting. Again, informed sources reporting this on the ground. Now, again, we've seen deals like this happen in the past. We just talked about the United States making a deal with ISIS to take their gold that was actually gold they got from selling Syria's oil. So they essentially stole Syria's wealth. Not new information. It's all out there to see. And as well as lying about defeating them and using them in other locations. Now, U.S. military offered these terrorists an opportunity to redeploy to Al-Tanf, an area located on the Syria-Iraq border where the U.S. maintains a small contingent of forces. Now, remember, this is a location the U.S. is committed to staying in indefinitely to protect Israel. Interesting thing to think about. Now, according to the sources on the ground, this is something that is happening right now. Now, holding the families of these captured ISIS members hostage, they're reporting, the U.S. is demanding that the terrorists launch an offensive against the Syrian army and establish control over Al-Shir, Al-Maghara, Al-Jazal, and Al-Tuwanyan, and they're all oil fields. Again, I'm sure that's just coincidence. Now, another goal of the offensive is capturing a phosphate mine and forcing the Syrian troops to abandon the checkpoints of the strategic Damascus-Deir Ezzor highway. Now, according to the report, again, the first batches of ISIS terrorists have already arrived in El Tomp. We have independent reports of this from civilians on the ground. We have independent reports from this from Syrian forces, from Russian forces. This is what's been happening for a long time. Now remember, this is the general air, the internment camps, the Al-Rukban camp where they're keeping Syrian people. They've also said there are terrorists here charging us for water and food, dancing in and out and carrying out operations for the United States. This has all been talked about. So here's yet another journalist now saying that they have shipped more terrorists into the Al-Tomp area and positioning them and they're training them in these areas. They've already set up, according to the report, ambushes and executed surprise attacks against the Syrian troops, killing at least 20 soldiers during the last few days. Now, again, we've gotten reports of these attacks. The simple report is just ISIS attacked U.S. forces, but now we're getting information from the ground that these were orchestrated, that these were carried out by a U.S. operation using ISIS terrorists. It's pretty damning. And it's not surprising based on everything we've had before. Now, the terrorists are benefiting from difficult terrain and also enjoy continuous support and U.S. reinforcement from Al-Tomp. Now, it says, however, informed sources claimed that this clandestine operation is only a part of a bigger long-term plan of the United States command to preserve American influence in this resource-rich area. How does that not sound exactly like what's going on everywhere else that we can point to? Now, according to the plan, after ISIS succeeds in capturing territory from government forces, the SDF will intervene to, of course, liberate and seize control of the desert areas, acting under the pretext of fighting terrorism. Again, understand these are the people that the U.S. has pushed into these locations. SDF comes in and pretends to liberate the area from as they're fighting terrorism, even though they're working together. Now, this scenario is painfully reminiscent of the path the Pentagon took in northern Syria, where SDF overcame ISIS after the terror group had captured the area from the government. Now, should this plan succeed, the U.S. will get to keep its military presence in Al-Tomp, which they're going to do anyway. But understand, basically what we're talking about here is the United States using ISIS forces by capturing their families and holding them hostage, using ISIS forces against Syrian government positions, which we've already been seeing happen, helping them to take territory from Syrian government, then using the SDF to swing in and pretend to take it back from, and they're all in cahoots. And then the U.S. is back in control of these areas, all under the guise of fighting terrorism. Now, is it possible all this is made up? Sure. Of course it is. Propaganda comes from every direction. But every single thing that this Syrian journalist is outlining from his sources that he's talked to in Syria, on the ground, in these locations, you know, as opposed to the mainstream media that takes it from on high from their Associated Press and French news agency and Reuters that get handed down from the intelligence agencies, as we recently talked about. The point is mainstream media doesn't have sources on the ground. As this journalist is saying this from the ground, my point is it aligns exactly with everything we've seen happen before. So how many times do we need to see this take place before we recognize who the true villains are here? And I'm not talking about America or the United States. I'm talking about the oligarchy that has taken control of our country, our foreign policy. American people are the United States. It's quintessentially American to stand up and call out the illegal actions of your supposed leaders if and when it goes rogue, when it pulls away from the interest of Americans and the world. That's our job. This is what the Constitution outlines, that it is our job, it's our duty as Americans to stand up and call these things out. However, today, it's been morphed into being un-American to even think about questioning what the government is doing today. And that is the propaganda. That is how they're controlling so many people. And it comes all the way from our Prussian-based indoctrination elementary schools into real life. But that's what we're here for. That's what you're here for. Make sure your kids are being educated properly. Make sure the people you know are being educated properly. Make sure you share the information as much as possible in every possible way. Because human life matters no matter where they are. And we're talking about countries like Venezuela, countries like Yemen, for instance, where people are dying every day. Hundreds of thousands of people, children, every so many minutes dying right now. And they don't think that matters enough to tell you about it. Hopefully people can begin paying attention. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I always appreciate all of your support. Thank you everyone for the super chats and for being here in general, taking part in the conversation and thinking for yourself. Because that has never been more needed in this country than today. If you'd like to support this channel, there's many ways you can do so. All the links are in the show notes. You can check it out for yourself to find yourself a Question Everything t-shirt to support this channel. You can do so by Patreon, Bitbacker, PayPal. But as always, just simply being here in the chat and taking part in this conversation is what's most important. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.